Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A. Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, it's another hot, beautiful day in the Twin Cities. How are you?
It is lovely, man, for both our domestic and international audience. And a shout out to some of our friends and listeners in Dubai, if you will. The oil chiefdoms and et cetera sent a message to me that they are tuned in there in the Persian Gulf, and shout out to them, and also shout out to our longtime listeners in Nottingham, England. Don, you know who I'm talking about, and Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
So just want to give kind of a shout out to that. Don, I think I have to indicate that you were one of the highlights of one of our big conservative radio stations this morning. Interviewed Mr. Allen, and we're talking about a surprise legal action, which was first announced on this program about 3 months ago by the Council on Black Minnesotans, one of the last acts by Chairman Lawrence, who was retaliated against. But Edward McDonald, I understand, has filed necessary papers suing the state of Minnesota in the Ramsey County District Court, which is the county adjacent to us here in Hennepin. The county seat is St. Paul. Don, can you walk us through what's happening here, man? Because I thought that would be something NAACP or Urban League or the Leadership Conference or some of the many leadership would have done. Can you just bring us up to speed, man?
Because this is
a bombshell.
Yeah, I was kind of taken back because, you know, like you said, I thought that maybe one of these other groups would come to the rescue and on the behalf of the Council on Black Minnesotans. But what happened, Council on Black Minnesotans executive director and council filed a lawsuit against the state, claiming as a whistleblower and claiming that they were being retaliated against because of this legislation run through by Carolyn Lane, Columbia Heights state representative, and State Representative Rena Moran, that was kind of ran through the legislature to kind of change the construct.
Yeah, go ahead. We got
change the construct of
Go ahead, Don.
Black Minnesota. Okay, and so what was happening was they wanted the executive director to reapply
for his
job.
People, I see a number, foreign number came up.
mm-hmm.
Must be checking to see if we're here in the city or where. But Mr. Allen, go ahead. I'm sorry that was a call on one of my private lines. People checking to find our whereabouts. Go ahead, my brother.
Yeah. So, there was a lot of stuff. Mr. Edwards, we have a caller, and I just want to see who this is because this might be in a call I was expecting.
Okay.
Particular
go
segment.
Right ahead.
Let me just check. Caller, you're live on the air. Who am I speaking with? Okay, they are not there anymore. As soon as I went to them, they hung up. Okay, so that was not the call.
Was that a 651-300 number?
No, it wasn't. No, it was not.
Okay, we had a similar call on one of our cell phones. Kind of wondering what's going on. I've never seen the number before.
And then we're getting calls like crazy, Mr. Harris. Just a caller, you are live on the air. Who's calling?
Please put me in your queue.
Okay. we'll put the caller in the queue. Yeah, thanks for calling, caller. But anyway, Mr. Harris. Getting back to the Council on Black Minnesotans, I was a guest on AM News, Twin Cities News Talk Radio, AM 1130 this morning, and the topic was the article in the Star and Tribune about, you know, the Council on Black Minnesotans, the name change, and the attempt to make the executive director reapply for his job. The very interesting
now that
thing
would be
is,
Edward
you know,
McDonald.
Yeah, that would be Edward McDonald.
Okay.
Who is the executive director, who's done wonderful things. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, there is actually a paper trail now of things they've done. As in the first 20 years, you couldn't find an email of anything that they really accomplished. And that was the truth. And you know, I covered them for a while. I had some videos online, which are since down because the new council trying to give them a chance and opportunity to do what they need to do. And without, you know, people pointing at stuff. So there's some very questionable behavior by the Minnesota Office of Administration, Department of Administration, MnDOT, Met Council, some other state agencies as far as it pertains to hiring affirmative action and hiring people of color. And so, I mean, the council said we have to address this at this end, you know, at our end here. And that's what the law says that that's what they're supposed to do, advise the governor on these things that are happening. And so once that started, once they turned the light on in the bathroom and the cockroaches start running, people got kind of nervous. They said, well, you know, they're going to expose us. And, you know, as far as the DFL is concerned in this town, they don't want to tell on each other because everybody's friends, everybody's buddies. And they just figure that, you know, we're going to just keep it status quo. You know, we're not going to have that many African-Americans working in the state office building, in the MnDOT, and in these other places unless they're working in civil rights areas, which is it. You know, as far as decision-making areas, you know, it's hard to for a black person to surface. I mean, you have Kevin Lindsay with the Department of Human Rights on St. Paul.
Let's be concise and not be disrespectful. We'll be accused of being disrespectful. Kevin Lindsay is the two-term commissioner of the Department of Human Rights. Now in his second term, a man who has been heard on programs indicating that 32% of all workforces on state projects would be people of color, African-Americans, et cetera. We can't find a 32% factor on any project that's going on. He said 32% of those working on the Viking Stadium, which is now about $15 million overrun, would be African-Americans and et cetera. And we can't even get any numbers, man. And you know, I don't even hear from Mr. Tuttle. By the way, we have invited Mr. Tuttle a number of times, Mr. Allen has told me. And Mr. Tuttle has declined to come on this program, but he was on a number of other programs in which they didn't ask him any tough questions. But we just want to recognize who's who. Kevin Lindsay, who, am I correct, Mr. Allen, that prior to this lawsuit that Kevin Lindsay was trying to advise the governor to not only strip the council but to place them directly under his custodial control?
Yes, you know, Senator Bobby Joe Champion had a bill passed where there wasn't a hearing on to give the Minnesota Department of Human Rights $50,000 for this young man to go around the state and do these listening sessions. And in some cases, you know, it was exposed that, you know, people didn't show up. He didn't turn in the numbers. There were no sign-up sheets turned in. So, I mean, it could have been anything. It was, you know, it was like a Scooby-Doo episode. You know, you're wondering, like, you know, where's Shaggy? You know, well, where are these people at? Who are you talking about that said this?
Okay.
You know, how
but let me say this to my friend on the right, my co-host, Mr. Allen. We had people like, of course, Senator Hayden, Senator Champion, Senator Pappas, one of the most senior senators out of St. Paul, Representative Lane, Representative Doran, who were all indicating that they wanted Edward McDonald gone, as well as Padawan Lawrence, who was not reappointed per recommendation of the DFL, which is kind of interesting. It wasn't the Republicans, as I understand it. I think Senator Chamberlain, who has been a friend and has talked with you, and you, I think you and he have been on a couple programs together. It wasn't the Republicans that asked that Mr. McDonald be ousted. It was Democrats, you know. Wow. I mean, what did Ed McDonald and them do to the Democrats?
Yeah, it was really shocking, you know, considering that, you know, in 1980, Al Quie at the time, who was the Republican governor, independent Republican, I should say, you know, thought it important to make sure that, you know, the black Minnesotans had some type of functioning body in the political arena, you know, based in the state. And went ahead and pushed it through. The unfortunate thing was, Mr. Edwards, is that, you know, they put someone there that they know that wouldn't do anything. And for 20 years, the community said nothing. They basically, I mean, you know, they gave the museum $50,000 years ago. They gave some Geechee people in New Orleans some money, but nothing ever happened here in the Twin Cities, you know, that was of significance. And so all of a sudden, you know, you have the new council under the leadership of Patwin Lawrence and Ed McDonald, you know, writing, you know, proposals, sending them over to the advisor's office, turn them into bills, going to meet with the Republicans and the Democrats, and all of a sudden, you know, our African-American elected officials, you know, turn snake oil on them and decide that, oh, they're doing too much. You know, they're doing way too much. We need to slow this up. And the best way to slow us up, we're going to tap on these different white state reps and senators' shoulders and ask them to write a bill. Let's get these guys out of here. Let's make this guy reapply for his job and not hire him, you know. And what he did is he exposed not only the Minnesota Department of Administration, but the cities of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis. Because if you go to
those two liberal cities with Democratic mayors, you're with receiving basically 88% of the black vote in both cities. Are you kidding, Mr. Allen?
Oh, no, no. What he did, he just showed him. He says, you know, there are numbers online in the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis that talk about their hiring. And when you look for Native American, African American, Asian, you might see a one. You know, whereas you look in the white category, you might see 30 or 40. In some cases, you'll see zero, depending on, you know, the higher up the rank, the less people of color you will see. In some places in the city of St. Paul especially, there are zero African-Americans working in specifically sensitive areas, you know, where you would, you know, we'd hope that, you know, the city that I'm in out here in Columbia Heights, Mr. Edwards, is very interesting because I think they're doing a better job than the city of Minneapolis. I see African-American male men and females, you know, working on the city crews, driving city trucks, you know, taking care of the city business.
What, in
yes.
Columbia Heights? Is that right?
In Columbia Heights. And our city council person out here, Donna Schmidt, is very keen on making sure there's some fair equity. I mean, there's some equity going on amongst the residents, you know, per capita out here.
She's a Caucasian official.
Yes. And you know, when Betsy Hodges got elected, you know, she had all these meetings talking about equity, equity, equity. Well, I'm going to make sure there's equity in the city. And, you know, Betsy Hodges doesn't understand. Mayor Hodges doesn't understand that. She's a placeholder mayor, and she's not going to have much power. But, you know, this term will be over soon, and we can move on and get some things done, hopefully. So that's kind of my assessment.
I understand the Democratic Executive Committee has basically indicated that they're encouraging her to run for a second term. There's got to be a slight problem behind the reappointment of Chief Janae Harto, who has apparently done some recovery and has improved her relationship with the communities of color. But I'm hearing that things are not pleasant between the mayor and Chief Harto. And that's kind of interesting because that could be a big battle. Chief Harto's term is, you know, technically up December 31st of this year. So that's something you need to keep an eye on. And the mayor today announced her budget recommendations and et cetera. I guess she's going to continue to fill the positions at the Department of Civil Rights. Kip Brown, congratulations to Kip Brown. Kip Brown finally got a judgeship. He's been appointed to the Hennepin County District Bench. There's hardly no one in administrative leadership left in the Civil Rights Department. I'm trying to figure out who's going to run what. And they keep producing these bogus numbers. So what Ed McDonald has done is that he may have peeled the onion back all the way.
Yeah,
the two most liberal cities, in the United States, what we're always told, and we live here, you know what I'm saying? But, again, what does Mr. McDonald, Mr. Allen, what does Mr. McDonald say in his brief that he has filed with the county, or in this case the district court? I mean, what are some of the things that he's alleging?
Well, I don't want to misquote him at all, Mr. Edwards, and I am waiting on an email. I just got an email response that they will send me a PDF copy the whole filing. So hopefully before the show is over, I will have that. I apologize to our listeners. I don't have this right now, but I am actually looking for something else to see if I can find it. You know, Star Tribune wrote an article, but they didn't really get into the guts of it. They didn't put the PDF up of the actual filing, and it just was basically a superficial reporting drive-by, I call it, without any guts or anything in it. And it was kind of disappointing. And they usually, if it's anybody else, they put up the whole PDF, the court filing, and, you know, don't let us get in trouble. They'll have a whole thing right there for people to read, you know.
Yeah.
Don did this. Mr. Edwards did this. And
But
some
of
the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of the
things. Well, hopefully representatives of the Black Council, Council on Black Minnesotans, will allow us to at least reflect on that. We're going until 10 o'clock tonight. We're doing an hour and a half program here on the Don and Ron program. Give the phone number, because maybe some people have some questions of us with regards to this lawsuit, historical lawsuit, unprecedented.
Yes.
This kind of lawsuit. And we apologize to Mr. McDonald and to Mr. Lawrence, who has been on this program a number of times. In fact, Mr. Lawrence broke. It was this program that he made the announcement that they were moving to file a action in the courts against the state itself. I have to be candid. I questioned that Mr. Lawrence and Mr. McDonald would do that, and I have to I have to be fair and indicate that I misjudged them. I didn't think that they would do it. They did it. It cost Mr. Lawrence his chairmanship, if you will. And apparently, Mr. McDonald is holding on. Mr. McDonald, of course, is an African American, as is Mr. Lawrence. But clearly, Mr. McDonald is holding on to his position. Now, I understand last night, Mr. Allen, that you were in attendance at a meeting of the council. Is it true they didn't have a quorum?
No, they did not. By the time I left, they did not have a quorum. I left
what is a quorum?
At least five members.
How many?
At least five members. At least five members in this case.
Well, they have three elected officials, don't they? Don't they have at least two state representatives, Mr. Rand and Ms. Dietzick, and then, what, one senator or a senator? I mean, you mean they couldn't get five people at the meeting?
Yeah. It was, State Representative Moran was showed up, and one other board member, and then you had the executive director, McDonald, and then one other
does
board member.
Does Mr. McDonald count under the Constitution? Does he count against the quorum, or?
No, he does not. No, in that case,
so
he does not.
You mean you only had two board members show up?
Mm-hmm. And see, I just pulled up, Mr. Edwards, I just pulled up the Star Tribune story, and, you know, they did a legislative audit right after the former, Lester Collins, the former executive director, had left. And so the Star Tribune, here's how they set it up. They said a legislative audit has shown that the state's four ethnic councils lack clear goals, and they communicated poorly with constituents. The audit also found that some members rarely attended required meetings. Now, this is prior to Patwin Lawrence, Chairman Lawrence, and Executive Director McDonald. Okay, unfortunately, except for last night's meeting. And, you know, the governor has to appoint some more members to that board. I think he's going to appoint four more members or in that arena. But I have here, someone just sent this to me. The suit alleges that lawmakers retaliated against Edward McDonald and the council because earlier this year they had prepared a draft lawsuit alleging that the Minnesota Department of Transportation, MnDOT, had not sufficiently fulfilled the state's affirmative action hiring requirements. The draft also... Mm-hmm. The draft suit also alleged the Minnesota Department of Administration did not sufficiently audit agencies' compliance with those requirements. The suit filed Monday reiterated those concerns. And we know, Mr. Edwards, in 2013, MnDOT contracted for $891. Again, I need to repeat that. MnDOT contracted for $891 with one African-American contractor.
What was that, to buy some jelly beans or black jelly beans?
Yeah, some jelly beans and, you know, probably some fishing poles
wow.
to sit on the dock of the bay. But you know, it was 0.0003%, 2-3% of the $400 million in contracts they entered that year.
In other words, it was 0.00032. Jesus,
that's 891. That's someone's paycheck every 2 weeks that they get out of $400 million in contracts, and that's a lot of money. And if MnDOT would do the right thing, Mr. Edwards, the unemployment rate in the state of Minnesota would drop dramatically. But again,
let me ask
these
a question,
Ms.
Allen, from Studio B here. Now, because you've been talking about that, and I've oftentimes been on the programs because you have really talked about that. People say they're irritated, they're tired of hearing you keep giving that figure, but the figure is a reality. Obviously, Mr. McDonald is going to get the court to have to take a look at that. But now, the NAACP and the Urban League, have they joined the council in this lawsuit,
well,
in this litigation?
You know,
I mean, St. Paul doesn't have an Urban League. Their Urban League collapsed a couple years ago.
No.
But did the NAACPs join the Boston State Conference, Minneapolis, St. Paul, NAACP, St. Cloud, Rochester, Duluth? Did they join the lawsuit?
Just a minute. I can check the NAACP right now. Oh, no, they're crying. No, I don't even think they have enough money for postage, the Minneapolis NAACP, but no, they did not join the lawsuit. And, you know, as of today, I am confident that the Minneapolis Urban League does not support black business in any way, shape, or form. Seeing, you know, a major lawn care company working on the lawn care.
You mean a lawn care company. You said
care.
You mean lawn care?
Lawn care, like
one black company we used to have here was C&L, Lawn Service. Yeah. Is that true that the Urban League retain on the contract a white firm that doesn't hire black people to do the manicure on the little bit of grass that's around the building there on Plymouth Avenue? Is that true? I mean,
is that really true,
Mr. Lee? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
And then I snapped a picture today because I was shocked because, you know, between me and you, Mr. Edwards, I think we know maybe 5 or 10, you know, people that do lawn care, from mowing grass to fertilizing to seeding to laying sod and all that stuff. And so.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting just to see that. I was pretty shocked. And if anybody want to challenge us, again, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. So, yeah.
Let me repeat again, because I know we have a lot of, you know, supporters and listeners and et cetera. Is there any possibility, are there any negotiations going on now between the two? It would be the state NAACP conference and particularly the Minneapolis and St. Paul NAACPs. Are they negotiating? Are they getting ready to file briefs with the district court, asking that they be included in what is going to be basically a class action? If not, why not?
Well, I can't answer that, Mr. Edwards, because, number one, I don't have
a member.
Well,
now, wait, Don, from the right. Well, now, you are a card-carrying member of the NAACP, and your organization just had a meeting last Tuesday evening. I was looking at, in fact, we discussed some of their committees and et cetera on this program last Wednesday, talking about the meeting the prior night. Now, come on, Don. Now, I mean, I know that you and other NAACP members have been probed, if you will, about, you know, I mean, you took up the cause of a young man that didn't pay $1.75 to get on the light rail, you know, and was kind of roughed up by the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, Mr. Edwards, too, you know, they was over in, you know, that with the Black Lives Matters, laying out on University, blocking the light rail and traffic, you know.
Okay.
You know, with
the
Black
same
Lives
light
Matter,
rail, though, that no black folks worked on and got any contracts? Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm
so,
just
you know,
trying to get
yeah.
a sense of, you know, what the thinking is, what the philosophical reflections and et cetera are, because people can try to dismiss this about what the council under the leadership at the particular time of Mr. McDonald and with the support of outgoing Chairman Lawrence. People can poo-poo that if they want, but that's still, man, that's quite an action, you know, that you just don't see state agencies suing the parent organization. I mean, that's really rare, particularly when we are, well, though we do have a split legislature, but, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to make inquiry, Mr. Allen, so that we can reflect calls and questions that come to us from around the country and et cetera about what's going on up here. So, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the phone lines are certainly open, and we hope maybe Mr. Lawrence, though he is now departed, I read his departure letter in the Spokesman Recorder, the largest and oldest African-American newspaper here in the state of Minnesota. I was glad to see him do that because the last time he was here with us, in April, he reported that he was not going to be reappointed. And I remember I encouraged him to at least initiate a letter of departure, if you will, about some of the accomplishments of the council, and particularly he and Mr. McDonald. So, well, you know, like I said, phone lines are open, but anything else, Mr. Allen? Because, man, we got so much going, and I'm getting text messages and saying, how come you guys are not talking about the continued violence? By the way, found a corpus delicti behind one of the Target stores in South Minneapolis this morning. So that's about the 34th, 35th homicide here. Oh, by the way, congratulations, man, to our friend Louis King, who just received $400,000 from the Northwest Area Foundation for additional training, and he's going to have a savings program. He's going to be doing like SNL, savings and loan, out of OIC, according to the article in the St. Paul Dispatch. For some reason or another, Star Tribune didn't deal with it. And then the American Civil Liberties Union got $250,000 to do preparation and et cetera around the state. But again, Louis King, OIC, for $400,000 for training. It's apparently for the group of his employees that will be working one of the concession stands at the TCF Stadium upon the opening of both the Gopher and Viking seasons. You know, in fact, last week in the production meeting if a couple people that have called in on this program over the last year would be prepared to kind of give us a call and talk in terms of what happened, because I'm not sure that are they. Well, you know, I'm not going to name them at this point, you know, let them make their own decision. But are they a part quickly? I mean, are they a part of some kind of conglomeration? Corporation or something involving Mr. King and his corporation, who now has positioned himself with a significant concession stand that could bring as much as $350,000 in profit, starting with this season, and then when the Vikings move into if the Vikings have enough money to finish it, the stadium I'm talking about, will be moving into the Viking Stadium. With a beautiful concession stand, and I assume well-trained employees. But anyways, I wanted to congratulate Louis, $400,000 from the Northwest Area Foundation. So things are out there to continue to train our people, and I assume put them to work, right?
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see, Mr. Edwards.
And if you get any texts on that, anybody text, tell them, you know, just, you know, give us a call. Let's open the phone lines up. Give us a overview of what they think, because that's a master achievement, if you will, because the Vikings have total control of the concession business, both at the TCF during the time that they would play their games, eight in fact, and definitely will control all aspects of that when they go into the new Viking Stadium. So apparently the Vikings decided to give Mr. King and his corporation and I'm not sure it's the OIC Corporation. I think this has to be an independent corporation. Doesn't it, Don? Don't you think so?
Yeah, I do. I do, absolutely. I would have to agree with that statement 100%.
Yeah. It has to be. Yeah. Okay. Well, Don, we're at the 9 o'clock hour, man, and we We have a couple other things. We're also waiting on a call at 9:30 to talk in terms of security issues now at play in Ferguson, in and around Ferguson, and we'll be taking a look at the presence of white militia, white armed militia, who are clashed in the streets with African Americans over the last 3 days. We've got security experts there, so they'll be joining us at 9:30. But we got this situation, Don, with the with the University of Minnesota. They lost their athletic director for sexual impropriety. I mean, you know, and the phone lines will be open for this too. What's your take on what you've seen so far with regards to Norwood Teague? Did you know, Teague, do you know much about him?
I don't follow sports at all, Mrs.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
But you know, I had a lot of questions because, you know, I was reading the Star and Tribune, and you know, I was reading this story by this Reno, whatever her name is.
Reno came to us from Boston by way of North Carolina. What were your observations? I mean, you know.
Well, I was trying to put it together because this, you know, Ms. Everett, if I'm not mistaken, this is the same. Okay, we kind of know this guy was a slime ball based on, you know, I'm not giving him no props at all right now. Okay, but I'm looking at this reporter. This reporter seemed like she had the inside track for everything. I mean, from Tubby Smith, Ms. Madeline, because I went to her site on the Star Tribune website, and, I mean, she had a place on there, a kind of chronological order of what happened to Tubby Smith, how it happened, how he got released. And it seems like, you know, she had the play-by-play for each time, you know, of Coach Smith's demise.
She was extremely close to Norwood. When he arrived here in, if I'm not mistaken, he arrived here in like April of 2012. They began to liaison, if you will.
Oh.
He let her know that she would have inside information. It, you know,
oh,
apparently,
yeah.
You know, this is what he had done at Virginia Commonwealth. Of course, what happened was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was also recommended by the current president of the university, who had also just come aboard as just a great fit
mm-hmm.
For the University of Minnesota, particularly given a $190 million development project and building a lovely, massive training facility in which they're almost half of that money short. So, you know, the word was, I mean, that Miss Reno and Norwood Teague had very, very close relationship, and she reflected that in a copyrighted. Notice I said a copyrighted story, and it was in Monday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and I don't want to call it the Johannesburg Times, but it looks like that's what it's reverting back to, in which she talked about that she was the victim of sexual harassment, if you will, late night texts. Meetings to have drinks and et cetera. Apparently, there was a lot of drinking going on. In fact, someone says there on one of the white websites yesterday was that there was like a $300 liquor bill at J.D. Hoyt's, which is one of the favorite places of myself and Mr. Allen.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised by that because, geez, J.D. Hoyt's has had a bill, you know, an account with the University of Minnesota for 30 years. So I'm not surprised by that. But there were these parties at Norwood's home. By the way, I got to tell you, Don, some of those parties were taped.
Oh, no.
Yeah, some of those parties were taped because there began to be, by early 2013, particularly as Tubby was being fired and forced out, there was starting to be discussion about Norwood's opinion of black people and, you know, black athletes. Now, you know, he felt that, you know, we were kind of like the children of slavery, if you will. It was all right to bring us into the programs, have us make money for the institution, but we definitely should not be in positions of responsibility. And, of course, when he arrived here at the University of Minnesota March of 2012, and there was only one African-American head coach. But we've had a couple of basketball head coaches, both in the men's and women's program. But, you know, in his discussions with Ms. Rannell and some of her colleagues at the Star Tribune, he used an interesting reference that he just felt that Tubby Smith was not a healthy fit, whatever that was supposed to mean. I mean, Tubby Smith is a Hall of Fame coach, going to be Hall of Fame coach. Has won national championship ring, University of Kentucky. Did not have a losing season until his next to last season when I think he finished 500. I mean, that's amazing at places like Tulsa and Kentucky, places like that. But what I'm disturbed about is that why now Ms. Reynolds decided to tell her sexual harassment story, and why did they not have the same kind of concern when in late 2012 and through 2013, you know, just prior to the termination and forcing out Tubby Smith, who he had just given a three-year extension to, too. That's kind of troubling. Why there was no reflection about Norwood Teague's thinking and philosophy about African-Americans. You know, he got involved in the quarterback controversy in 2012. At one point, he and the current head coach, Jerry Keel, who has become really a darling of Minnesota fans, and you know, he's gotten them to a couple of bowl games, mid-level bowl games, not the real top four or five where you can, you know, in position for national championship. But I understand that even Jerry Keel became a little bit uneasy because, you know, what they used to say in the Second World War, loose tongues sink ships. Also, sync programs. It's said that Jerry Keel became a little bit uneasy with Norwood, Teague's, and others within the athletic department's reflections about, you know, the blacks, you know. And in fact, the more they would drink at the parties or whatever, the more the NIG would come out, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I kind of wondered why this reporter who talked in terms of wanting to save her career, I mean, a good journalist, one who's going after a Pulitzer, would have told, you know, would have written about the demeanor and the philosophy, if you will, of the man who is the athletic director at a great university or once great university. And that didn't happen. And I'm being told now, Mr. Allen, that one of the things and the reason that the Star Tribune has closed ranks behind this reporter are some of those text messages and et cetera, and some of those recordings. Because I guess they used to have some knockdown, drag-out parties there at Norwood's house.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I
same thing
imagine.
He used
I
to do
imagine.
There at Virginia Commonwealth, VCU. And that was a much more, you know, smaller area, if you will, population-wise and et cetera. But I guess Norwood is kind of legendary with respect to, you know, what he expects from his companions. Oops.
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, I got some inside track here. A high school buddy of mine, Pete Nigerian, Dr. Nigerian's son, is interested in being the new athletic director.
Oh, I didn't know you were going to mention that because I was. But go ahead, man. Lay it out. Dr. Nigerian,
and,
whose sons went to the University of Minnesota. One of his sons was an All-American linebacker. Go ahead.
And then another brother named Hutton that once played at the U is interested in being the new AD, athletic director. And I mean, I would really like to see Pete Nigerian in there as the athletic director of you. You have some hometown flavor, alumni, you know, someone with a name and a legacy already there at the U. And, you know, these are guys, you know, the Nigerians, the family who sent their kids to public schools, Bryant, Ramsey, Minneapolis Central.
Yes, because you know, Peter's father was one of the most legendary surgeons in the world, not only United States, in the world. I mean, he was the pride and joy of the University of Minnesota's whole medical faculty and reputation and et cetera. I think that that would be an interesting recommendation to the selection committee. I guess the selection committee hasn't been appointed because, according to this morning's edition of the Star Tribune, front page above the fold, is that they want to now do an audit of how the money was being spent, and they want to do some other things. I'm not sure that I understand audit for what, because we were just being told until the information came out and the text messages and everything started showing up, and the two employees, neither one working for the Star Tribune but working for the university, went to the human resources office and you know, talked about what was happening. I'm not understanding, why, like I said, why now? But I know nobody wants to talk about race, okay? I know that. I mean, that's a no-no, because we need these black athletes to make money for our basketball and football programs, keep the fans entertained, right?
Yeah. That's what happens.
Again, these phone lines are open as we talk a little bit now about the scandalous departure of Norwood Teague, a former athletic director at the University of Minnesota since early 2012. But, I wrote, just so we're clear here, in my newspaper columns in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, the oldest black newspaper here in Minnesota, in the April 3rd and April 10th, 2013, Mr. Allen, 2013, this commentator wrote about the troubling pattern that had emerged, and earlier in late in 2012, I had written a column in which I was extremely disturbed. At that time, Tubby Smith was 15-1. I mean, that's a tremendous record, if you will. He had got things turned around. He later was to go to the second round of the NCAA, and Miss Reno was just blasting him. And you kind of touched on it here a number of minutes ago, in which she had all kinds of observations about his incompetency, Now, what was being talked about but could not be confronted, because both of them would have denied any kind of relationship at that time, is that where was this information coming? She really didn't have a background in sports, when she was given the job as the lead basketball college basketball writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And so I was kind of used to wonder back in 2012 and early 2013, before Tubby was forced out, where she was getting all of this in-depth. Well, lo and behold, in her article, her open letter, talking in terms of that was me also kind of thing, that was her statement. One of the things she did was talked about in these many, sessions that she and Norwood had, sometimes late at night, different locations. And this was at a time when she had a boyfriend, too, by the way, who later they broke up. Some say because the boyfriend became extremely irritated about these late night texts coming to the home and et cetera. But I'm just not sure at what point it was decided by the Star Tribune and by her and then by the university, again in light of the tapes, that it was not important to confront Norwood Teague about his racial animus towards a Hall of Fame legend, Tubby Smith, who is now the head coach at Texas Tech. Also, they played a heck of a game. I mean, we need to just say this, Don. They played a heck of a game using the Star Tribune on the black alumni, and you and I know many of the black alumni at the University of Minnesota, sports alumni, and others, when they faked a couple of stories that the then head coach, also at Virginia Commonwealth, Mr. Smart, was being considered. He never was really being considered. A man by the name of Conan, who was the head coach at the University of Cincinnati, was really the man that Norwood was after. But then Norwood was approached by the father of the current coach of the University of Minnesota basketball team, who himself is the head coach at the University of Louisville and, of course, is a Hall of Fame coach, and was actually the person that Tubby Smith succeeded at at Kentucky and won national championship. But then this deal got cut that they would bring the young Pitino up here, and he got out of town just in front of the sheriff. And you know, Amelia never wrote about that. And here's what that was, Mr. Allen. Because there are specific rules that are promulgated by the NCAA, one of those rules has to do with graduation. Oopsie-daisy.
Uh-oh.
And
uh-oh.
Tubby Smith was legendary with respect to making sure that his athletes, irrespective of race, creed, color, national origin, et cetera, graduated, right? Well, when young Pitino was down there at a small college in Florida, his colored ball players never graduated. In fact, he's having a hard time holding the players that he's got here. I mean, they come here, they play 1 year, they're gone, or they come, and then their scholarship was withdrawn, or there was a problem in the registrar's office, and et cetera. But anyways, the NCAA had informed the Florida school that Coach Pitino was the coach at the time and just prior to him being appointed at the University of Minnesota, that they had failed to meet the requirements for academic achievement and perfection, and that they would not be allowed to go to any games, if you will, tournament games, and et cetera. They would not be eligible for the NCAA. They also would not be eligible for the NIT, and et cetera. So young Pitino got out of town just in time. Now, here's one of the questions that I ask now on this program. What has been the academic success of the University of Minnesota basketball program under Norwood, Teague, and Coach Pitino, and also, you know, football coach Jerry Kuehl. Oops.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go right ahead.
No, I was just saying that, you know, I remember Coach Smith, Mr. Edwards, if I'm not mistaken, I think he made sure that all his players graduated from the
That's
year.
That's what
not
I just said, Mr.
Allen.
He had an outstanding record of graduation, which the NCAA has insisted that all that's important, that must be a successful endeavor, undertaking, whatever, if you will, if you want to be the recipient of the gratuities, if you will, and the goodies that come with you know, being a part of the NCAA success story. And I had not heard much discussion about what graduation rates look like from the lead sports writer for the basketball program at the University of Minnesota, Ms. Reno. And yet this was one of the things that was discussed during some of her, you know, meetings and liaisons with Norwood, if you will, that how unimportant it was if a black athlete, or in this case student athlete, was successful doing anything but getting in here, playing a couple of years, making some money, and sending him on his way. So I'd like to know how the graduation rate has been, you know.
Yeah,
and how many youngsters are on academic probation? Academic probation.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
I'd like to know how the NCAA has graded the University of Minnesota's basketball and football program as it pertains to the specific rules and expectations of the NCAA with regards to graduation. I'd like to see a little bit of something printed on that. And I'm just surprised that Ms. Reno has not really written about that, talked about it, you know, dealt with it. But I guess, you know, there were other things that, you know, were being discussed. But I really am disappointed that she never took it upon herself to challenge her editors at the Minneapolis Star Tribune to support her. But then maybe being a North Carolinian or Carolinian, maybe she agreed more than we know with Norwood Teague's philosophy and observations about the marginalized role of black student athletes at a great big white institution. You know, maybe she concurred with some of his sentiments about these big black bucks. You know, that was a statement that he made a couple times when he got drunk. You know, these big black bucks, you know, that's a negative term for our international audience when you refer to a black human being as a big black buck. You know, that's a code word also for a big black mandingo. You know, mandingo to serve and pleasure white women and white folks. I mean, that's the way that Norwood talked, Don. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Mr. Edwards, but aren't there, like, the female coaches after you being let go and reduced in paid and
well, no.
And stuff like
well,
that?
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Allen, right? I shouldn't disrespect you. You know, you're not necessarily a sports fan. But you have to understand that the current women's basketball coach at University of Minnesota was part of, you know, athletic director Norwood Teague's entourage at VCU before she was hired here after Barton was quietly pushed out also, you know, not as viciously as Tubby Smith was a year previous. And she quickly was brought here from Virginia Commonwealth University. And, you know, I just always had a question. In fact, I reflected it in one of my columns about, you know, so what was the relationship there, you know. But Rachel Banham, the very outstanding All-American guard who was out last year with a knee injury, has indicated that she's going to come back and play. She, you know, she will get a fifth year, quote-unquote. And so there should be high expectations that the women's basketball team should, you know, be doing some fairly exciting kinds of things, but only time will tell. But the same thing should hold for the men's team based on what Ms. Reno has continuously written about the great recruitment job that Coach Pitino is doing. Now, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that the only sports writer for either of the big white papers back in 2013 who questioned what was happening to Tubby Smith and what was the real reason he was being forced out was, of all people, Sid Hardman.
Yeah.
And we reflected that in our own column of April 3rd, 2013, that at least Sid had raised some serious questions about, you know, why Tubby was let out. But see, the reason that much of that, Mr. Allen, is so bogus is that it was well known within the sports complex within Behrman, that named for a former coach of the University of Minnesota back in the 1930s and 40s, that it had been decided that Tubby Smith was, you know, kind of a freak of nature, and it was time to cleanse. Is that an appropriate word coming from, you know, the days of the Nazi regimes of Adolf Hitler? It was time to cleanse and purify. You know, that you know, it doesn't mean we don't hire maybe an assistant colored coach here in football and maybe one in basketball. We've never had really any in baseball or really track and field. And those are, you know, revenue-producing sports. But the two largest revenue-producing sports at the University of Minnesota are football and basketball, in that order. But Norwood had some interesting observations about, you know, the Negroes are here to entertain, you know. And
yeah,
he was not shy about that, Mr. Allen, and listening audience. He was not shy in discussing that with the reporter from the Star Tribune. And he also discussed it with some of the good old boys of the Twin Cities Fourth Estate, if you will. And particularly when he'd get to drinking, man, you know. he, in fact, oftentimes sometimes referred to himself as Caesar.
Oh,
I mean, he looked kind of soft like Caesar, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And what I want to do also, I want to go back for those that have a long history, as I do, with the University of Minnesota and athletics and everything else. They really need to go back and read the book Under the Tarnished Dome, and they need to read pages 174 to 192, and they need to read chapter 13, which is a chapter in and of itself about the legendary Luther Darville and what happened in the trial in the Darville, State of Minnesota versus Darville, 1989, and the revelations about the level of corruption and racism. And some people have tried to say over the last, you know, 12, 13 years that no longer exists. But I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, when Norwood Teague arrived here, man, he brought all that baggage back.
Oh, geez.
And the reporter from the Star Tribune was very cognizant, very, very cognizant of this man's animus and how much he despised African-Americans as black Americans as having a relevant role within the institution of higher learning and particularly sports. And so I find it interesting that it looks like some cover-up is going on, Mr. Allen. That's my take.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And, you know, when we discussed this in the production meeting today, Mr. Edwards, you know, I was reading these articles online, and, you know, they were separating out the cost of alcohol and how much Norwood Teague was reimbursed for this, you know, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, what sense does this make? I mean, what's the point? Yeah, I mean, he goes out, he drinks, and a lot of people from that organization go out and do what they do and come back and have a bill and get reimbursed because they're taking out basketball players, clients, possible sponsors, and things like that. So what's the point, you know?
I agree with you, and I said that in the production meeting because, as we said earlier on this program, looking at the University of Minnesota and Norwood Teague, J.D. Hoyce is an example, which I think is the establishment which both you and I have patronized, if you will, has had a long-standing contract. In fact, when recruits, young men, young women are brought here to be introduced to the University of Minnesota and to sign on and sign that letter of intent and et cetera, it's either J.D. Hoyce more times than not and then also Monte Carlo's, where these young people are taken, and I've heard of, you know, bills coming out of there as much as $3,500, $4,000, $4,500, top of the line stakes. I mean, and young, particularly many of our young African Americans, you know, who are coming from poverty-ridden areas and et cetera, to that extent. I mean, you know, they're being introduced to $50 stakes. You know what I mean?
$50 stakes.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Edwards, after a little research here, you know, this could be system-wide because it just came up. Minnesota Duluth women's basketball coach resigned, citing unhealthy work environment. Posted June 2nd, 2015, a couple months ago. Annette Wills, attorney, cited a hostile work environment. The University of Minnesota Duluth women's basketball coach resigned Monday, becoming a third female head coach to leave the school in the past 6 months.
That's right. Let me just say this, because the sports, joining one of the most successful women's hockey coaches in the United States, who was told that there wasn't enough money for a program, and this woman had gone into the NCAA Final Four women's hockey to 10 of the last, like, 11 years. I mean, she is a legend in women's hockey, mm-hmm. and she is also a legend in Duluth, and yet they didn't like the fact that she wasn't, you know, kowtowing and et cetera. And what they did, they cut her budget, you know. I just don't understand. And I repeat again what I said earlier, that at one point in time, Jerry Keel and Norwood were cool with each other. But Jerry Keel, and particularly as Jerry Keel's popularity began to increase, Jerry Keel became very concerned with, and there were incidents involving Norwood Teague and some of the athletes. See, nobody wants to talk about that either, because he liked to come down and swagger around the locker rooms and et cetera. And there were problems with that also. And that's really what I mm-hmm. think the president now and the regents are trying to find a way to deal with that, but pretend that they're not dealing with it. And I repeat again, there were situations in which Norwood Teague was disrespectful of players of color, both basketball and football, particularly when he had a couple, you know, and when he was out with his friends, and particularly when he was out with the reporter from the, you know, when he sent that text to her where he said, "You owe me," he was talking about more than what she was trying to imply. He was talking in terms of how he had fed her the information that allowed her to appear to be an expert on the shortcomings of Tubby Smith, which then helped him advance the argument within the hierarchy of the University of Minnesota that Tubby needed to go, and then lied to everybody that he was looking at another black, a very talented black coach, Coach Smart, at VCU, when in fact he and Reno knew that that was bogus information that was being put in the Star Tribune and being advanced by the Star Tribune. They had no intention of bringing Smart here. And by the way, he's very in a very successful position now at Texas A&M. Yeah,
I'm getting texts like crazy, Mr. Edwards, that saying Tubby was blindsided. That was foul. It was wrong. And you're right on point with what you're saying, you know. And so that's
well,
so that
the naysayers are clear. I would strongly recommend them to go back and take a look at my last two columns in 2012 and take a look at those columns on the 3rd and the 10th of April, 2013, as well as the column that talked in terms of, thank you, Tubby. You've been a man of principle and et cetera. I was kind of stunned that the so-called powerful black sports alumni did not make more noise, but then I was made aware that you know, they were spending more time looking at the blonde sports writer than they were analyzing what had happened to Tubby. It's interesting now to see the text messages that you're receiving, Mr. Allen. I'm receiving some also.
I'm don't know. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, they're talking about you. But yeah, well, but that's why, you know, you have your alternate person.
Yeah,
your co-host sitting here with you, because I know the history. Again, I refer people that really want to understand how this battle has been fought. And one of the reasons that I worked closely with the NCAA in the mid-1980s to expose the racism and corruption in this institution was because of how African American were being treated. And with me, I started seeing it as early as the late 1950s, 1958-59, and definitely then when outstanding black talent such as Sandy Stevens, Judge Dixon, Bill Muncie, and certainly Carl Eller and Bobby Bell. I mean, I watched tremendous black athletes come here, but I watched other black athletes be treated very poorly over a period of many, many years. And then I watched how they turned on Clem Haskins. On one hand, they asked and demanded that Clem win. Clem started doing what he had to do to win. They certainly accepted all of the glory and et cetera until it blew up again, when they should have known, coming on the heels of the Luther Darville situation in 86, 87, 88, and 89, that the NCAA was looking down their throat at every turn. And one of the toughest investigators in the history of the NCAA, Bill Minix, Bob Minix was on top of them all the way. And by the way, Bob Minix played with, and again, the best to the retiring Associate Justice, Mr. Alan Page, retiring after 22 years on the Supreme Court bench. But he and Bob Minix being from Spokane, Washington, he and Bob Minix played in that great 10-10 tie, Mr. Allen, at between Michigan State and Notre Dame, with Bubba Smith and George Webster and Clinton Jones, who played for the Vikings on one side, and Bob Minix and Alan Page and some others on the other. One of the greatest collegiate games ever played. So anyways, there, those of us, irrespective of what the Star Tribune or Norwood Teague or Miss Reno and her colleagues think about black people, that there are black people out here who know how the waters run.
I'm Tim Misty.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. I'm getting some texts in here. Let me just – I'm asking him to call the studio line. Again, that number for anybody that wants to call in, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
That's right. Mr. Allen, I need you to check. I think we should be getting a call from out of Missouri, because this militia thing is equally important as anything that we're dealing with tonight. We're going to be going to 10. Dangerous situation right now across the country. These white militia are on the move, and there are plans, that are extremely frightening. But again, phone lines are open for any questions to Mr. Allen and to yours truly. Again, I'm going to continue to push this. The book Under the Tarnished Dome by Yeager and Looney, 1993. Man, did they blow the cover off not only Notre Dame but the University of Minnesota. You know, talks about corruption and racism.
Mm-hmm.
Some say they thought the university had learned their lesson, you know, 20-some years ago, 30 years ago. I just don't think so, Mr. Allen. I just don't think so. But go ahead. What else we
okay,
got?
We have a call coming in right now, Mr. Edwards. Stand by.
All right.
Call. You're live on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Missouri. It's
okay.
Steve from Missouri.
Mr. Edwards, call.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And this is who? What name are we using?
Oh, this is Steve. This is Steve.
Steve. Yes.
Yeah, from
Mr. Allen, I had talked to Steve and his agency and et cetera. We are trying to get as much information as possible on what is an emerging danger there in Missouri, Steve. What the heck is it with these armed white militia that have stormed the streets of Ferguson and St. Louis County and have been involved in shooting at African-Americans and shooting some of them? Can you walk us through what the heck is going on right now down there?
Well, the group that came in as a militia, it's part of the militia movement. And, you know, that movement that started probably back in the 80s or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Oath Keepers. And they're, I guess, a nationwide organization. And
okay.
Yeah, they're primarily, I believe, ex-military and police. They have, ex-firefighters, EMTs, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
They're primarily, they consider themselves, I think, to be more of a libertarian organization.
Okay.
In fact, the interesting thing is that the founder of that organization was actually a member of Ron Paul's staff at one point. So
wow, Ron Paul, the father
yeah,
Rand Paul, and the former candidate
yeah.
for president of the United States. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah,
out of Texas.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. Tell
yeah.
us a little bit about.
Yeah, his,
I mean, who are the leadership of the militia there in Missouri who have put armed white militia on the streets, facing off against unarmed African-Americans by and large?
Well, there are actually two people. One is a guy named Sam Andrews, and the other is John Kerriman. And I think they were both out there in the streets in Ferguson. One guy, I watched a news report, and one guy said that his name is John, but he wouldn't give a last name. And then another guy did identify himself as Sam Andrews. So they're the
now
two.
They were wearing body armor. They were in civilian clothes, but they were carrying automatic weapons and et cetera. These are the same
yeah.
gentlemen we're talking about?
Yeah, I believe they were carrying AR-15s and the like, I think. But they had I think it kind of astonished a lot of the people there. I mean, to see these guys carrying this and the police do nothing, because a lot of people there were saying, well, you know, how are these guys coming out here? If a black guy walked around with an AR-15, yeah, exactly. I mean, that was
wow. Let me ask you this, sir, Steve, if you will.
Yeah.
What has been their position on the fact that they are acting under the Posse Comitatus? By basis of the Posse Comitatus, that they have every right as white individuals to be armed and to take appropriate action as a Posse Comitatus against any yeah. citizen, and particularly against African Americans.
Yeah, well, there. I mean, I think the whole Posse Comitatus thing was that it was the authority of the county, and they kind of believe that the only authority there is the sheriff of the county. But they're, I guess what they said was that they came there at the invitation of a journalist there to protect a couple of journalists who were there, who I
wow.
think were also part of the movement, though. So, But I think a couple of nights ago, a journalist from, I want to say, the New York Times, I think, and the one from the Post-Dispatch were kind of roughed up a little bit, nothing major, but I think that's one of their excuses for being there, that these other two journalists had wanted them there to protect them.
And okay, so they are operating then under the doctrine of posse comitatus. And it, you just touched on something, sir, and you know, Mr. Allen may want to kind of follow this. I was amazed that the county executive of St. Louis County, in which Ferguson is located in, declared a state of emergency and quote-unquote really disarmed the Ferguson Police Department, which is now under a black interim police chief. You were with us last summer. We appreciated bringing information to us.
Yeah.
When that suggestion was being made by African Americans and black political leaders and et cetera, and both the governor and the governor Nixon, is that correct? Correct.
Right.
Still governor there
right.
in Missouri, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The governor, the county executive, and the chief of the county police both said, "No, we're not going to take law and order out of and enforcement out of the hands of our good white police department in Ferguson." Mr. Anderson, who was brought in from Arizona, takes over as chief just a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden, operating under the doctrine of posse comitatus, the white, because the black the black county executive was ousted from office, right?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the white county executive declared that the Ferguson police department is now persona non grata, and that not only are the county police taking control, but they have called upon these white militia who have been training.
Yeah.
And Mr. Allen, go back and take a look at our on demand. We talked about this time last year, that these boys were in training, Steve, and I think you could walk us through this, were in training in places like down in the Ozarks around Springfield and Joplin and et cetera. And there were some deaths, particularly up around Cape Girardeau, down there in the so-called boot. There were some mysterious deaths. There was a couple of deaths up around Cameron, Missouri, and et cetera. And people were saying that posse comitatus, that these militia groups were doing target practice on black people.
Yeah.
And the white media, Don Allen, of CNN and others, were saying that was far-fetching and et cetera, until these guys showed up on the streets three nights ago armed to the teeth. What is their absolute authority, Steve, at this particular point in Ferguson, these white militia?
That's a good question, exactly what they can and can't do. There's something very interesting. In August of 2014, the State General Assembly passed a law now. And let me just read just a little bit of this.
Please do, sir.
It's the state, any political subdivision or any person shall not prohibit or restrict the lawful possession, transfer, sale, transportation, storage, display, or use of firearms or ammunition during an emergency. So that is why they're able to go out there now. That's what they're claiming now, is that because it's a state of emergency, they can now bear these arms out and, they can walk around with these assault weapons. Because it is, it's 44.101, so no restrictions are permitted in a state of emergency. So that's what they're saying. That's what they believe they have the right to do now.
Let me ask you this, Steve, because you are strategically placed without going into specific details, as we would not do last summer. Why is the national media remaining so silent about that particular statute and the authority that has been invested in these white militia because African Americans who even look like they're carrying a weapon are being stopped. And Louis Farrakhan from Chicago, of all places, raised the question about what was happening in Ferguson and this state of emergency. And Mr. Allen, we are now apparently the only program with a platform that is now raising this question, and we appreciate Steve bringing the statutory authority and documentation, because I'm very much aware that these groups have been in training in Tennessee, in South Carolina, in Idaho. In fact, a group is on its way now from Sandpoint, Idaho, to the Ferguson area, well-trained in the art of urban warfare, snipering, and et cetera. I just don't know if people in Ferguson understand how dangerous this situation is right now. Has there been any reflections by the St. Louis Democrat newspaper, the Kansas City Star, and others about what power these white supremacists now have?
Well, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot, at least in the Kansas City paper. It's mainly been more of a national news story. There's been some, but, I mean, they've talked about basically it's been St. Louis County Police Chief John Belmar.
Who allegedly walked into a crowd of Negroes and said, get your black asses off the street, as is now being reported by Fox News. Yeah. I don't know if that actually happened, but he's being declared as, quote-unquote, the new Bilbo of Missouri. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I mean, really, Mr. Allen, the media, the white media, indicated he walked into a group of young African-Americans, told them get their black asses off the street. And is the chief of police of St. Louis County Police. Is that correct? In other words, he's similar to the sheriff.
And they, you know, the funny thing was, too, that he he's been asked, how are you allowing you know, these militia members to walk around with these assault weapons? And his answer has been basically, well, I have to talk to my lawyers about it. So
he's a kid. Saw that when he was running against the former Black County executive. By the way, gentlemen, we are aware that it was militiamen that shot young Mr. Harris, the young African-American who was, in fact, being provoked. Actually, he was being targeted. The record will show that he was a personal friend of the late Michael Brown. They were actually following him. He realized what was happening. He had acquired a weapon because he had been threatened for the last number of months. The media gentleman tried to say that the authorities that fired on Mr. Harris and critically wounded him were undercover police officers. There were no undercover police officers. The four individuals, Caucasian individuals in that car that opened fire on Mr. Harris and a group of young African Americans, those were all members of the Oath / Posse Comitatus group. And they are suspected of killing a young man last year who was found in his car, and the car was burned up. And, see, gentlemen, once the FBI, and you know, I don't know, you know, once the FBI, under William Holder and Loretta Lynch or anybody else, once they gave a clean bill of health to Darren Wilson, who has clearly indicated, as far as he's concerned, black people are nothing but animals, which is shared by many of the militiamen that Steve is talking about, the barn door has been closed, but too late. Anything else that you wish to share? Any questions you have, Mr. Allen, on this report coming out of Missouri? And let me do this because could you, sir, Steve, could you read that particular legislation that was quietly passed in the Missouri Assembly last year, which has given the county executive the authority to bring these white militia in from as far away as Sandpoint, Idaho?
Yeah, sure. It says the state, any political subdivision, or any person shall not prohibit or restrict the lawful possession, transfer, sale, transportation, storage, display, or use of firearms or ammunition during an emergency.
And so we are clear from the record here from this program, the Don and Ron program.
Yeah.
There is a state of emergency existing in St. Louis County, including the cities of St. Louis and Ferguson, Jennings, and others.
Yeah.
And white militia are now serving under the guise of the doctrine of posse comitatus, are now serving, quote unquote, as a paramilitary force with powers to detain, arrest, maybe even execute citizens who they deem as a threat to the natural order. Is that correct?
That sounds correct.
God help Black America, man. Black people better get armed, better get ready, baby, because it's clear to coming. Mr. Allen, you have any questions of our friend from Missouri? Mr. Allen's probably on a text message.
I am Steve. Back, George. Yeah, I appreciate
you. Oh,
okay.
You got any questions
really
of
great.
Our caller from Missouri?
No, I do not, Mr. Edwards.
All right. Steve, want to thank you again. I'm going to ask you to join us again next Wednesday for an update on what the state of affairs are a week from today in Missouri, particularly with the state of emergency and with white militia, armed militia, similar to those that were involved in gun battles in Texas a month ago, coming in, as we said before, as far away as Sandpoint, Idaho, heavily armed. All right. Want to thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, I don't know, Mr. Allen. That was a powerful piece of but I saw that as a young African-American in the 1960s when J. Edgar Hoover and them put those kinds of laws into place, and young African-Americans found themselves being rounded up, and we were clearly being told that we had no rights. It was a state of emergency. Yeah. Not a pleasant thing. In fact, we had a state of emergency here in Minnesota way back then, and we saw National Guard on the streets, and we saw curfews, and black folks were confined to their homes in North Minneapolis at dusk, if you will. So, those phone lines are still open. Anybody has any questions with regards to the state of emergency and the presence? And see, I keep emphasizing this. I find it amazing, Mr. Allen, with all of these folks that have opinions and et cetera, have no questions about who these white militia are.
Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, we're going kind of deep on them, and you know, this isn't a Sunday afternoon program in Minneapolis. This is kind of a thinkers program, and folks definitely don't want to challenge or call or. You know, they'll tell a friend. You know, it would go across the Whisper campaign will absolutely start, but you know, we won't get no calls because we're not stumbling and fumbling. You know, so
okay.
I just put it like
that. Well, I'm saddened, particularly in light of, and one of the things that I did not want to ask the caller, did not want to compromise him. This caller was a person who was involved in helping to uncover the lynching of a young African-American from a TV tower in downtown Springfield, Missouri, about 13 or 14 years ago, which was never solved. Ku Klux Klan hung a young 19-year-old African-American from a TV tower in downtown Springfield, Missouri, and it never was solved. And one of the men that he named as two of the leaders of this Posse Comitatus group was identified as one of the individuals seen that night with that young African-American, had him on the ground and surrounded. One of the individuals that Steve named just minutes ago was a prime suspect, but a grand jury declined to even look at the case in Springfield, Missouri. And if anybody wants to question us, we're going to have Steve back next week, and we're going to go into a little bit more detail about some of the history of some of these militia members. But I just got to tell you, man. But you have got my mind right, Mr. Allen, because you're right. We're talking about a different kind of discussion, program, and et cetera.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. We have another caller, Mr. Edwards.
All right, go ahead, caller.
Oh, gentlemen, I'm on the air.
Yes, you are,
sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'll identify myself. I'm Mr. M. I try to call in, quite regularly, listening to your program tonight. Very, very informative, as usual. But I guess I just had one, comment about, the recent, the ongoing situation with Ferguson, and not only Ferguson, but in this whole country, really, is what it is.
Yes, sir.
This statement of state of emergency.
Uh-huh.
I sit there and I listen to this and, to me it would seem like it's a heightened kind of response to an imminent type of a problem in an area that they're going to really put resources in to address. But what I see a state of emergency is that black people get killed. It seems like it gives license to a reverse chaos from the police or the law enforcement to thump heads, to shoot, to run over people, to mace, to do whatever what they want to do because of a state of emergency. I don't know. Am I misreading or mishearing
this?
No, sir.
You, sir, are absolutely on point. We appreciate the caller from Missouri who is well-placed and well-connected, let me put it like that. When I became aware that the county executive who defeated a black man who had been in office for 20 years, the word was out that there was going to be a different kind of summer, 2015. And I just have to say that it is kind of frightening because and I know, M, that you are a very learned person, so you understand the doctrine of posse comitatus. And it is a very dangerous philosophy. It is etched in parts of the Constitution. It is taken full advantage of by the Caucasian, if you will, by the white race, if you will. And some of the things that have been talked about in the last 4 or 5 days, but in the last 4 or 5 months leading up to the summer of 2015, should be of concern. But leadership gets quiet, man. FBI, the Obama administration, everybody get kind of quiet. But I'm telling you, if you listen to some of the things them boys have been saying, I'm talking about the group, what they've been saying about they're not booking any kind of crap. And there will be bloodshed because what the word is that what they'd like to do is take it beyond Mother Emanuel in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. They'd like to put 35 or 40 African Americans down like it was a coup d'etat. And I'm talking about, young African Americans laying all over the street. And these boys have the capacity because they're working very closely, particularly with segments of the St. Louis County Police. And I just say this to you, Em, as we move to a close, that they have a plan, and that's the reason that I chose to report that a Pacific strike unit is on its way from Idaho, from Sandpoint, Idaho, to conduct an action in and around Ferguson, Missouri. The FBI and all the rest of them know about it, okay? And when it comes down, everybody gonna do what? You and I have heard this for years. We had no idea. Oh, yeah. How surprised we were. See, we're concentrating on ISIL and the Middle East. We had no idea that our terrorist organizations here in the United States who are not, quote-unquote, Muslims, we didn't know they were planning anything.
Well, gentlemen,
they already got it together, brother.
In calling in, I hear these words, state of emergency. I mean, I think that's the tip-off for me right there.
Okay. Yes, it is. All right. Want to thank you, man. Get to us earlier. But
I
we
sure
will have Steve out of Missouri back. But we appreciate your call. We appreciate your reflections. Thank you, sir.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Mr. Allen, interesting situation, man.
Yeah.
I was hoping that some of our people would have had some concerns because if you have the wrong situation here, let me guarantee you this, you will have a state of emergency here. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In a hot minute.
Yes, sir. All right, man, let James Brown take us on home.
Here he goes.
We'd rather die on our feet. Keep living on our